Now, just to remind you, we're going to talk to someone from the Green Party in the U.S., where, by the way, they've got a real one down there. They fight for things, and they get involved, engage, as they say. And at the halfway point, we're going to be talking to a Canadian lawyer who practiced at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. And there's been a big revelation in the Globe and Mail that the former prosecutor and former Supreme Court Justice of Canada admits that it was, in some sense, Victor's justice and that she didn't entirely do her job. And we're going to find out about that. And that'll be at 5:30. But I think we're joined now by Matt Funicello. Are you there, sir?
I am here. How are you doing?
We're doing good. You are this is not your first rodeo. You're a Green candidate. But you set a mark there. You got an 11% vote in 2014?
I did. I ran for Congress in Northern New York in 2014 and got 10.9% and almost beat the Democrat by 0.2% in my home county.
Now we're talking.
It's a huge district. It's 12 counties. It's the biggest district east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, you're near Lake Champlain.
Yes, right across the lake from Vermont and from Bernie Sanders' territory.
Yes, I'm reading your site. I learned that he has a $600,000 summer home. You don't pull your punches.
Well, I have loved and had great respect for Bernie for much of the last 25 or 30 years. Uh-huh. I lived in North Bennington, Vermont when he was a mayor in Burlington, when he was elected as a socialist and an independent, and was a big fan when he went to Congress. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that the chess games he had to play to stay afloat in Washington, D.C. were, I wouldn't say they were disillusioning. I mm-hmm. understood what he was doing. He was voting for horrendous foreign policy that was going to pass anyway so that he was not targeted by the corporate and mainstream Democrats or the defense contractors who run them and the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And he managed to make a lot of differences as a senator and a congressman and earned the name of the Amendment King down here for from those of us who understood what he was doing. but I don't feel that's the next phase of progressive politics. I think we need to greet and meet the issues head on and be very honest and principled and direct and that people are going to respond better to that, this generation of millennials.
Yeah. Well, again, this is Matt Funicello. He is the candidate, in case you're voting, in 21st District of New York. And you mentioned the Bernie phenomenon, and all of us here we're quite interested in that. And everybody wanted to know what would become of those who really were excited by the issues that he raised. And because he's the Democratic Party, he was able to get a lot more public attention and whatnot. Now that he's made that turn, do you find that you're attracting support from the former revolution of Bernie Sanders?
It's ironic, I guess, that I kind of did call this. I said that, you know, Bernie must know that he's not going to win the Democratic nomination, and I said this 10 months ago and wrote it publicly and had a lot of people tell me it's really not very reasonable to expect that you're going to ride Bernie's wave to success if you're being critical of his run. Uh-huh. But I did predict that probably what would happen when the superdelegates and the DNC canned his run, which they did, and it really does appear that it was rigged, that probably a third of his supporters will go green. Mm-hmm. Probably a third will vote for Hillary Clinton, as he will probably instruct them to, since he's indicating 10 months ago that was what would happen. But probably and unfortunately, a third of them will feel horrendously betrayed and disillusioned by the experience, and probably won't vote for a very long time. Similarly to Howard Dean voters from 2004, people who were sheepdogged. I think Dean did it on purpose, though.
There's all these names, Jesse Jackson.
Well, there you go, too, yes. And I mean, certainly Black Agenda Report and many other very progressive magazines have been far less, shall we say, polite about it than I'm being.
Well, you are the guy who got the 11% vote. So,
Well, and I got that before this all began. And I mean,
so now you may be looking at something bigger.
Benefit me.
Yeah, now but you have to deal with the issue, and I've seen some literature about it. They say, Matt Funicello, he might be the spoiler. But, sure. And the answer being, so what? Why shouldn't you? I mean, it is a democracy. You stand for something. Why don't you run for that and see who wants it?
Well, and if we had a multi-party system and there were, you know, six or seven parties vying for each congressional seat, they might feel differently, Democrats and Republicans. But at the moment, with the two parties firmly ensconced for the better part of 100 years, I think we're having a lack of vision as voters and imagination, and we are not seeing the benefit that having a third or fourth or fifth party involved in each election cycle brings. And the primary one, it's ironic that it's a general election year, so lots of people are paying attention to the national choice between, as I like to say, the obstructed, monster from the GOP, who really is imploding their party entirely. He's finishing off with the Tea
special,
Party and the...
We should probably all be grateful. Somewhere down the line, we would be grateful that he's... the personality that dynamited the process are going to have to regroup for sure.
Well, you would think that we should be grateful for that, but I think on the on the fake left side, the unfortunate fact is we're looking at a Republican candidate for the Democratic Party too. Yes. This woman is so far right of, you know, probably even Richard Nixon, that she makes him look like a progressive. And really, the Democratic Party seems to be following this gold standard of Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
They even resurrect his...
they quote him once in a while.
All the time. And I mean, for her to be on stage with that war criminal Henry Kissinger just, you know, boils my fairly young blood, but blood young enough to... old enough to remember Vietnam and to have read The Best and the Brightest and to have understood what that man has done.
Yes.
You know, this is not a Democratic Party. The American electorate should be believing could ever represent human beings. It is such a corporate war machine. It's not even... ironic or funny. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
So in my race, I'm dealing with a Republican that they've literally brought here from Colorado, who spent his life in the Army Rangers as an officer, and then worked in the State Department in missile defense. And he's been trying to portray himself as if he is a Bernie progressive, because all of our 12 counties in the North Country went for Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. There wasn't a single establishment.
So this Halloween, they're wearing a Bernie mask.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Very appropriate behavior for Halloween. but it's very hard to tell what the result is going to be, because we have seen no polls, you know, for the entire length. They did a poll last September. The Republicans put out a poll that showed the Democrat and I in a statistical heat in the high teens, and the Republican winning easily. And you need to understand, this district is like a 30% Republican enrollment advantage, so it's a given that unless they run somebody with identity politics who can pull Republican voters, that they're not going to win, or unless they outspend the Republicans. And they don't ever back these people. The National Party did not give them any money in this race, just as it was with my opponent in the last race as well. So they're just placeholding. They're not even really seriously running this race.
Well, now, how does it resonate with you? This, you have some serious issues that Jill Stein has attacked them brilliantly, as her vice presidential candidate, Mr. Baraka. You have the military budget. I know this in your literature. You speak of the system where they now give themselves the right to spy on every American for their own good.
Yeah.
That must resonate with your voters, doesn't it?
Well, and in fact, I think that what we have been trying to say all campaign long is that if you go back to 1856, 4 years before Abraham Lincoln was elected as an anti-slavery candidate, never mind that it was the Republican Party, you know, that was the first third-party president, arguably.
Yes.
4 years prior to that, in 1856, we are the two districts that elected the first Republican congressman to Congress based solely on that principle that slavery was wrong. And I do believe that this district is still made up of very hardscrabble farmers and workers and people who are the working poor. And we're already embattled. You know, we're District 9 from Hunger Games, I like to say, with really beautiful scenery. And what we want to do is we want to inspire people to believe that we can do that again. We can put the first green, the first working class representative into D.C. and inject some common sense and a much needed working class voice into that body.
Yeah. Well, I've been impressed with Jill Stein went to North Dakota, where we're having this action now at Standing
Absolutely.
Rock. And it was great to see her there. And, of course, we haven't seen Trump or Clinton, and they're not at all interested in supporting this cause. And right here in the city, Toronto, by the way, there's rallies being held. There's a lot of support. And I think it's worldwide because this issue of indigenous peoples and what's happening to them along with the environment. Can you tell us how you felt about this issue?
Well, when this all first began, I mean, certainly in the last election cycle, we weren't talking about Standing Rock, but the lawsuits were already beginning back then to take this land back, or at least to be able to utilize the space and potentially poison the water of the Sioux natives who live there. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing to me that in the past year, the growth of support that has come about, but we have to give full credit where it is due, and I mean primarily that is Amy Goodman, such an amazing woman, and to Jill Stein as well, such another amazing woman, for using the vehicles they have, you know, Democracy Now! In Amy Goodman's case, and the Green Party platform and agenda for the presidential race in Jill's case, to go out there and give some support, but also to gain some media attention, because I do believe the corporate media in our country would have paid very little attention at all were it not for Jill Stein's arrest, not arrest, but her warrant that was issued for spray painting the blade of a bulldozer.
That's pretty serious stuff, apparently. In North Dakota, you spray paint a bulldozer and you're in for 40 years in federal penitentiary.
That's right, and yet we have yet to see anybody spend even a day in prison for poisoning people's water supplies
an entire people,
and never mind stealing the native lands that we all understand as Americans, and I think most of us are immigrants here. That is the case. Much as it is with Canada as well, that the Aboriginal peoples are looked on as a conquered people. And there is a tendency, I think, even educationally, to say, well, you know, we are the white people who are here. But the truth is, as with me being an Italian and of Sicilian descent, I don't identify at all with the whites who came here from Western European nations.
Yeah, you weren't here. That wasn't your...
I identify completely with the Aboriginal people. They are my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And it's my water they poison, too. And whether it's because they're building an oil pipeline, as they are attempting to in this case, or whether they are fracking, or whether it's like Hoosick Falls, you know, in the southeastern corner of our Washington County over here in Rensselaer County, they can be poisoning it with PFOAs, which are the latest new effluent from various and sundry manufacturing processes that the state of New York and the federal government really don't seem to care about. You know, these are our children who are drinking this water.
Yeah, and some of the other issues. I like Jill Stein's point that the. If you want to do something for the economy, lift the debt burden off students and end this system of indebtedness, which it's just like creating indentured servants, practically.
It's the green,
takes initiative
the
and prospects away from them rather than letting them use the skills that they developed. And also, well, have a universal school system that you get from kindergarten to graduation, college.
Absolutely. And I think the deplorable thing here, no pun intended, is that, the American educational system was for a very long time held up as the penultimate or the apex of perfection and excellence. And, you know, it was actually, ironically, Ronald Reagan who destroyed higher education in California by defunding it, and it was largely why the GOP brought him in to run for president.
Yeah.
And he did the same
thing. They figured he didn't have an education. Why should anybody else?
He did love monkeys, though.
Yes, that was what he was good at.
But essentially, you know, Jill's point is an absolutely astute one, and it goes back to the robber barons of yesteryear. You know, Henry Ford, I love to say, because it's true, he actually paid his assembly line workers at roughly twice the prevailing wage of the day for manual labor. And the jobs were not any more or less difficult than the manual labor jobs he was paying for. Mm-hmm. And he was asked numerous times by reporters why he would do such a thing. You know, was he some kind of socialist or anarchist? And he said, no, of course not. He said, it's simple math. I want my workers to be able to afford my cars. I want everybody to own one of these cars.
Uh-huh.
No, I say, where are those robber barons?
And yeah.
The problem is they don't live here anymore. They're multinational corporations. They're not human beings anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand wage-led growth. If you give a worker $15 an hour at the federal level, you are going to double their buying power, and that's going to benefit small business, which is the largest employer in the country. And Jill understands that, too. Same thing when it comes to free education. Free higher education at state schools or publicly funded schools only makes sense. I mean, all of these schools are subsidized by federal tax dollars anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time 40 or 50 years ago when they were almost completely free.
Mm-hmm.
Much as the Canadian system was set up, I did spend my school years in Ottawa, Ontario. I could have gone to either Ottawa U or Carleton University for, you know, the equivalent of $1,000 or $1,500 a year,
mm-hmm.
not 30, 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, they are paying far more in tuition. Here, you can go to a trade school that is funded as part of the SUNY school system, the State University of New York, and like my son, you can pay $15,000 to $25,000 a year for that vocational education. That to me is just unforgivable, that we are funding the F-35 project, we are funding $600 billion a year to make war overseas, and I don't think that only people on the left are upset about this. I think that people all over the political spectrum are starting to get tired of American War Incorporated and are looking at how we could better spend our money and refocus our priorities on domestic issues like this.
Yeah, and a Medicare system that is serves everyone and gets rid of the insurance companies.
Well, I often
that, by the way,
the
I
Canadian,
assume is very
the
popular
Canadian
too.
Medicare system as an example. You know, the World Health Organization, when it was running its ranking system 7 or 8 years back, had the United States at 38th out of 39 industrialized nations. And Cuba and Canada were both ahead. And as I like to point out at that time, if you look at the wool handler study from Harvard that was done in 1998, mm-hmm. Americans are already spending out of the Federal Reserve, so this is magic money, this is like quantitative easing, we're printing $6,000 per American per year and spending it subsidizing big pharma and the healthcare industry. Curiously, not a cent of that goes to making health care available to Americans at all.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought process is if we can afford that $6,000, surely we could afford the $3,800 in 1998 Canadian dollars, especially with the exchange rate that Canadians were paying for their health care per capita.
Mm-hmm.
So we could save hundreds of billions of dollars that we're already spending out of the Federal Reserve and simply change the age of Medicare from 65 to zero. And Dennis Kucinich, who was a progressive Democrat in Congress from Ohio for a number of years here and a hero of mine, actually had sponsored H.R. 676, which was exactly that resolution. It was one page, and it changed the age of Medicare eligibility from 65 to zero. It's already fully funded. It
Terrific.
Makes Obamacare irrelevant, and whether it's constitutional or not, irrelevant. You don't need it anymore. All the redundancies are gone. All the profit is gone. And if people still wanted to buy private insurance on top of that, no one's stopping them from doing it.
Yeah.
But common sense is not something we have in a country where Fox TV represents the right and the New York Times represents the left, and both of them lie about single-payer health care, and both of them are indentured to the corporate parties.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, that's a mouthful. I have a relative in the San Joaquin Valley asked me one day, she said, do you have that socialized medicine in Canada? And I said, well, we don't call it that. And she says, well, we need it. We need it. And otherwise, she didn't relate much to the world. But at that point, she really drove home.
Sure.
And
well,
studies
have
expect,
shown here.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, that's why I think the Green Party has some wind in its sails. By the way, you do have very attractive candidates at the top of your ticket. I mean, these I'm very impressed with Mr. Baraka and Jill Stein. They do step up. They don't just issue a few statements. You know, they take on the issues.
Well, I have loved on some level to suffer the attacks primarily from the Democrats because the mythology is that we spoilers of the true left are only pulling from them. And I mean, as an aside, that's not true. And there has been every example set so far. Anytime a Green runs, pardon me, much like a libertarian or an independent, we actually will pull from all three voter groups that are fully disenchanted with corporate candidates, period. And in fact, in the last election cycle, I pulled from primarily Republicans and independents and then Democrats. It was less than a third of my voters were Democrats. So Jill is in that same boat, and the Democrats nonetheless have attacked us mercilessly. And Jill is an anti-vaccine person, and Jill is anti-science. Jill is wealthy and living off the backs of workers with stock ownership that is terrible. And I just say, well, Jill also is a woman who is doing three or four campaign events a day for 2 years without appropriate media coverage, and who slept on my couch napping for several hours between events when she came to visit our neck of the woods, a tireless advocate and warrior regardless of any of the attacks that have been mounted against her. And I just wish the American people could know her the way they think that they know Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or the two parties that represent them, because they don't. She's a real human being.
Yeah. Well, you know, the game of keeping you out of the debates is, were she to appear with Trump and Clinton, her numbers would go immediately up by big numbers. They would jump.
Well, when Jesse Ventura was elected to the governorship in Minnesota, he said that that was 95% of the reason. He said they couldn't keep him out of the televised debates because he was a wrestler and a nationally known, internationally known actor, movie star. Yeah. So it was impossible for them to exclude him. And he was only polling minor single-digit percentages before the first debate.
Perfect.
And in each debate, he gained 3 or 4%. And they had 6 or 7 debates in that. And by the time it was over, it was a three-way race, and he won it.
Well, I think
the problem for many of us is we're not movie stars. actual working class people who are and you know, Jill as well, who are not running on millions of dollars of corporate money, and don't have the ability to make the same splash hundreds of millions of dollars in television advertising can. So we're appealing directly to voters on a human to human level. And that's a tough battle, but I do feel like we're making great headway every single cycle.
Yeah. Well, Matt Funicello, you have my vote. I mean, you're the most qualified candidate I've ever interviewed. So I wish you well. And if you don't mind, we'll check up with you after the election. We'd like to have your analysis of what unfolds, okay?
Oh, I would absolutely love that. Well, I really, really appreciate the time. Thank you so very much.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Take care. A pleasure. Okay.
Bye-bye. That's Matt Funicello, and he is a candidate in New York 21st District, and he is mad and not going to take it anymore, as they say, particularly on this issue that we want to remind everybody, the Stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, Toronto Standing Up for Standing Rock, and it's a solidarity march, Saturday 3 to 6 p.m. That's November the 5th, and it's going to be at Queen's Park to the American Consulate, and it's called by the Standing Rock Sioux Nation and support of the land and water protectors. My gosh, when I think about an oil pipeline under the Missouri River, I just say, oh no, you know, the devil has been here. This is Halloween. They're going to put a pipeline under the Missouri River. And what, then they're going to say pay up? Or what will happen next? The city of Bismarck, is my understanding, Bismarck, North Dakota, of course, arranged that the pipeline not come anywhere near them because they, too, didn't want any problem with their water. So there are some natives, and that's their tough luck, according to the conquerors. You can look that up under Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. There's also a gentleman named Custer. You all know about Custer. The battle lasted approximately 22 minutes. Anyway, it goes on. This is The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think we listen to Mr. Lee Morgan and take a break, and we'll come back with Tiffan Dixon.